Recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today, 1-800-691-7898, and let Robbie Noel or Jeff Bennett help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the second hour of the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. My special guest on the phone with me is Marcy Brooks, and we'll be joined here in just a moment by Tessa Rose. Marcy, I want to finish that story, though, about Aaron contacting you. So he called you up at work, and you gave him a brief review of the story that you've just told us over the phone then, right?
Right.
Now, go ahead.
And then he said, you know, well, we've got to get this on film. And so he said, I'll be contacting you. And sure enough, he flew me out to Washington, and that's where we did the interview.
And in Washington, D.C.?
Yes.
Okay.
And then I didn't hear anything for ages, seemed like. And then I was talking to a lawyer from Texas who we had a mutual acquaintance, and he called me and was asking me questions and stuff. And I said, well, you know, I don't even know if I'm in the final cut. Mm-hmm. And he said, you haven't seen the movie? And I said, no. And he said, Marcy, you're the biggest interview of the whole thing, you know. And
absolutely.
It was like, oh, my land, you know. So I am just constantly blown away. I mean, Thursday, Alan introduced me as a heroine, and I'm going, you know, I'm just a citizen, and I just did right. What I think every citizen would do or should do. I don't know. But
well,
I'm just grateful to be in this position.
Well, and we're grateful to you, and unfortunately, Marcy, not every juror will do that, as we can learn in the case of Tessa Rose. And Tessa,
right.
Tessa and her husband were both charged with several counts of willful fair file. And if you're there, just tell us your story and, you know, what about your trial and what's happened since then.
Well, you know, when Marcy said that I'm just a citizen, I'm just doing what I feel like I ought to do, that's exactly how I feel, too. And how I've felt through this whole thing, that I'm just trying to do the right thing, you know, and why doesn't everybody?
Right.
I guess a lot of people don't. I don't know. But when we went into federal court, we really had a lot of faith in the American people, you know, that we were going to get to tell our side of the story to a jury, and that, you know, Larkin and I, we both knew that we were innocent and that all the evidence pointed to us believing what we said. You know, there was absolutely no evidence that we didn't believe what we said.
Right.
And so we had faith in those people, and we certainly learned a lot going through that experience. One thing that you learn is that you're not allowed to defend yourself. You're not allowed to tell your side of the story.
Mm-hmm.
The government will object to any kind of exculpatory evidence, anything
right.
that tends to make you look innocent. They object to it, and most judges will just uphold that.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll misuse the laws of federal evidence to favor the prosecution. Because the judges want them to win.
Right.
So that's one thing you find out, is that we grow up with this mythology that you get your day in court and you can defend yourself, and then you find that the reality is really that you can't. And then after that, you're a convict, and people think it's just sour grapes.
Right.
You know, so it's hard to tell the story from the other side. And the other thing that we saw in action was the exclusion of jurors who were anybody who was the least bit interesting or showed any evidence of thought or like there was one woman who had who'd been a war protester, and she hadn't paid taxes for a little while because she didn't believe in war, and we thought, oh, she's just great, we got to get her on there, and of course she was cut. And a very interesting thing that happened to me, I was called for jury duty about 2 months after I was convicted. And I noticed that on the form that you get for jury duty, there's an out for lots of people. There's, you don't have to ask to be excused. You can just excuse yourself. If you're a doctor, a lawyer, if you're a clergy, if you're a college student, if you're self-employed, or if you're a mother with children under 10 years old, or if you have a criminal, if you're a felon, then you're excluded. So right off that, you know, most people don't want to do jury duty, and they'll take that out. So the system immediately excludes all these intelligent thinking people who know anything about the system, people who have a social conscience, or anybody who's anything like me, you know, the self-employed mothers, they're all excluded. So my jury ended up being people who were nothing like me at all. Right. And so to get on a jury, you really have to kind of sneak in there and not look like you're a person who thinks. You know, you have to just kind of look like one of the sheep, and that's the only way you're going to get on there. And so I just, when I watched Aaron's movie and I saw Marcy on there, I was just dying. Where were you? You know, why weren't you on my jury? And I know now that they, you know, they worry hard and very carefully to keep people like her off. And she was just the one who snuck through.
Go ahead, Marcy. Tell your. I think I know what you're going to say.
Well, I was going to say that I'm afraid that our case hurt everybody else's case, because I don't think in our case I think they were just so naive. It occurred to them that it would matter, because when I was being questioned, they asked me if I understood what civil disobedience was, and I said, "Well, I do, but I've never felt compelled to use it," and as the prosecutor was walking away, I said, but I always did think it would be fun to be part of Boston Tea Party. And I thought, oh, my, that kicked me off right away, you know. But somebody told me that the defense is allowed to have so many picks, but evidently that wasn't your all's case. They've already figured out a system where they can just filter out anybody like me.
Marcy, as I understand it, maybe one of our hosts will correct me, each side, the defense and the prosecution, gets to eliminate certain people, and they don't have to pay the justification. So stay with us. We'll be right back here with Tessa Rose and Marcy Brooks in just a minute.
Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in Prophecy, the Antichrist, Tyrants and Wars, Secret Societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $100,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the Task Force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, a penny saved is a penny earned. By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
People who use Cartavite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartavite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartavite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery to disease anymore. The basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the disease we see. When we do our program, you know, herbal formulas like Cartavite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 2 months later, we know we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. I mean, the idea of it working on yeast and metals both at the same time and liver function is dead on. You'll find, I think, work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartavite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in. My special guests on the line now, two of them are Marcy Brooks and Tessa Rose has just joined us here at the top of the hour. Just to respond to what you said, Marcy, about the picking of jurors, my understanding, and I might be wrong on this, I'm not an attorney, my understanding is that each side, the defense and the prosecution, gets to eject people for certain reasons, and they have some where they get to eject two or three jurors and they don't have to provide any reasons. I don't know that any side can guarantee that a particular person gets on the jury, because obviously in Tess's case, she and her attorney would have wanted to get that war person on.
Right. We want this person.
Right.
Yeah. We can only say we're not going to strike this person.
Right.
Oh,
and
then, of course, the government struck her.
Right.
Well, Peter, I guess that adds one more little point to the idea of God just wanted me on that trial.
There you go.
And Tessa, I just admire you so much. Just admire you so much for the courage you all have had. And you've been in my prayers.
Thank you.
Yeah. What's interesting in your trial, Tessa, and don't let me steal your thunder or take this in a direction you want, but I believe a couple of the jurors, you had said something in a private email to a former friend of yours about the IRS or something, and the jury really seized upon those statements and came over afterwards and said, well, we're gonna make sure we get all the stuff off our computers, because they had taken stuff on your computers, private correspondence between you and somebody. Tell that story, if you would.
Right. Well, I had written a friend from a long time ago. He was actually like my first boyfriend when I was a teenager, and I didn't live around here. And we hadn't had any communication with each other for, I don't know, 20, 30 years, whatever. And he just found my address somehow, looked me up, and wrote me a letter to tell me how he was doing. And so I wrote back, and the whole thing was very kind of light-looking and here's what I've been doing for the last 20 years, and I said that my husband is working on a video, and he's making a video showing people the truth about the tax law, and we're hoping that this will simultaneously make us rich and collapse the IRS. Mm-hmm. And so the prosecution seized on that, and I thought, well, who cares? You know, like, everybody wants to get rich. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with selling a video and hoping that everybody buys it.
Everybody wants to collapse the IRS.
Yeah, and wanting to collapse the IRS, I mean, that's a political proposal, you know, or, like, what's wrong with that? Doesn't everybody hate the IRS? Mm-hmm. So, but these jurors kind of seized on that. And besides which, it has nothing to do with whether or not I really believe in Larkin's position. It actually supports that I believe his position.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how can that hurt me?
Right.
You know, I don't like the IRS, obviously, because they're defrauding people.
Right.
But they kind of seized on that. For one thing, because I don't think they really understood the question. The
right.
question in this trial was whether or not I really believed what I was saying. I really believed
right.
that I didn't have to file taxes.
Right.
They kind of brushed aside that question and said, but she doesn't like the IRS.
Right.
You know? Well, nobody does. Is that a reason to convict somebody?
Well, and that goes to the point of the nature of the trial, too, doesn't it, Tessa? You don't get to talk about that statement in context. Only the prosecution got to present that statement in the context that they wanted to present it in.
Right, right. Well, I did not testify, and I was kind of backed into a corner and forced to make that decision real quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I was confronted with my husband and my two lawyers and just saying, should I or shouldn't I? We weren't prepared for it. He said, you have to go on the stand right now or not at all.
Mm-hmm.
And we weren't prepared because the prosecution had suddenly stopped much sooner than they said they were going to.
Mm-hmm.
And my lawyer was afraid that if he put me on the stand, they were going to bring out all sorts of other things like that, just, you know, my political beliefs and a lot of the things that she had tried to keep out
mm-hmm.
were going to come back in if she put me on the stand,
mm-hmm.
and that they were just going to do their thing to me and rip me to shreds. And
mm-hmm.
so I said, well, I'll just do what you guys think is right for once.
mm-hmm.
Right. And they said, just don't. We think you shouldn't testify. And
oh, wow.
Now, I think I'm going to wonder for the rest of my life whether that was the right decision.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm never going to know what would have happened if I had.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, it's easy to do that now to armchair quarterback, Tessa, of course, because your fate couldn't have been any worse than it was if you had testified, having been convicted, right?
Well, I think that, no, it could have been. And I think that's one reason she kept me off.
Oh, you mean you could have gotten a harsher sentence?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know, one thing that the government likes to do, if somebody testifies in their own behalf and the jury finds them guilty anyway,
mm-hmm.
they add a perjury charge.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they'll try to put you away for a few more years on a perjury charge because obviously you are lying.
So, well, but you have to be convicted of that charge as well, don't they? They can't just throw that in there.
I think they can just throw that in there. They consider it proved.
Hmm.
Now, I could, you know, maybe a lawyer could correct me on that, but in Larkin's case, he testified on his own behalf. He was still found guilty, and the government tried to do that, and Bailson just said, well, I never go for that. I just don't do that,
mm-hmm.
To his credit.
Larkin asked them for the law?
Pardon?
Did Larkin ask them for the law like what he did?
It was different because Larkin was defending himself. Go ahead, Tessa.
Yeah, it was very different. I don't think asked, you mean in court?
Yeah.
I don't remember if he would have.
His defense was different in this sense, Marcy. He went into there saying, not saying, as many people do, just show me the law. as Whitey did. He went in there saying, look, I've looked at the law. Here's where it showed the person to determine their taxable income from sources within and without, and it doesn't show my income to be taxable. Now, where his defense was shredded by the prosecution and the judge, in my opinion, and Tessa can differ if she does, is they didn't let him show 80 or 90% of material that he had. He just couldn't present it. He couldn't present his video. He couldn't present his report. He was limited in other kinds of citations of law that he could present. It was absurd to say that he's being charged with willful failure to file. In other words, claiming that he didn't really believe that he didn't owe money, and he could show this extensive written record dating back years, which showed nothing but that clear conviction.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what he was railroaded in that sense.
He was going more on the willful fail rather than whether or not there was a law requiring him to.
Right.
Yeah, because we'd already been told before we went in that you're not allowed to argue that point at all.
Okay.
Whether or not, in willful failure to file.
Okay. Let me cut you off there, Tessa. We're due for a break. So, folks, stay with us. We'll be right back with Marcy Brooks and Tessa Rose in just a minute.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes 4 books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Hey America, how does it feel to be flushed down the toilet of political intrigue and treachery into the sewer of slavery and bondage, where perverts and the godless write the rule, our unborn children are murdered, our esteemed elders are euthanized, and everyone in between is numbered and tracked like criminals so they can be farmed by government, credit, healthcare organizations, like the chicken farmer farms his chickens? Have you had enough? Is it time to declare your liberty? It's your choice, you know. The only place to begin to declare your independence is have enough food stored so that you never have to go stand in a bread line to give away the rest of your life or sell your children for a bowl of rice and a slice of bread. Call 800-409-5633. On the web, eatsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
People who use Cartivite know about the pollutants in our body and want them out. For over 5 years, Cartivite has proven itself time-tested. Here's Dr. Mattson, a naturopathic doctor's thoughts on Cartivite.
In our mind, there isn't such a great big mystery disease anymore. This basic tenet of yeast in the gut and metals in the liver covers at least 70-80% of the diseases that we see. When we do our program, herbal formulas like Cartivite, and you see someone who could barely walk up a hill now going for regular jogs, 2 months later, we're doing something right. It's a well-thought-out formula. The idea of it working on yeast and metal both at the same time and liver function dead-on, you'll find, I think, that it'll work more than just on heart problems and circulation problems. It'll work on other problems as well.
For more information, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit our Cartivite link at rbnlive.com. That toll-free number again, 1-877-928-8822.
Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. For tuning in to the Republic Broadcasting Network, we have Marcy Brooks and Tessa Rose on the line with us. And Marcy, I know that I appreciate you coming on and stay with us as long as you can. But if you need to leave, as we talked about beforehand, that's fine.
I'll go ahead and go just because I'm so excited about Tessa and interested in her. I'm afraid I'll keep interfering too much. So I want to give Tessa the floor.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Peter.
We'll do it again.
God bless.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah, Tessa. Just to recap for folks, your trial took place November of last year, right? November 2006.
Yeah, November 2006.
I was there. It was a trial about 3 days, I believe, and you were convicted. You chose to have an attorney represent you, whereas Larkin didn't. And in my sense, she did a pretty good job. One could always, I suppose, you know, Monday morning quarterback and criticize certain elements of her defense. But as far as I could tell, she seemed to do a good job trying to defend you.
Yes. I think she's a very good lawyer. The lawyers have told me that you don't get a fair trial even if you have a lawyer. I know Larkin was criticized by a lot of people for trying to defend himself.
Right.
But, and at the time I wondered if, well, maybe they were right. I know he made a bunch of mistakes.
Sure.
But we've seen trials happen after that where people had very competent counsel and they still lost.
Sure.
And what I was saying just before that last commercial break, that willful failure to file consists of three elements.
Mm-hmm.
The first being that you're required to file. And that was something that we were not even allowed to discuss.
Right.
We're not allowed to defend ourselves from that element. Mm-hmm. The judge will just say, well, they were required to file, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
I know in Erwin Schiff's trial, he tried to bring up the law and say that there was no requirement. He was defending himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that judge just blasted him and said, I will not allow the law in my courtroom.
Right.
The second element is that you didn't file, which we weren't arguing about anyway.
Right.
So our trial, both of them, hinged on the third element, which was that we knew we had to. We knew we were required.
Right.
So it's really, that's a piece of the injustice, is that you're not allowed to defend yourself from that first part of the charge.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think that another thing that Marcy said a while back was that she thinks what happened in Whitey's trial has hurt people since.
I think she just meant in one sense. I don't think necessarily overall, but in one sense.
Yeah. I think we have to realize that the government learns from every trial.
Sure.
We're trying to learn, and they're trying to learn, too.
Sure.
So that something that worked for one person may not work for the next person.
Right.
And something that one person shouldn't have done, another person should have done.
Right.
And I think that there are people out there who are sometimes a little too harshly critical about, you shouldn't have done this or you should have done that.
Right.
And they're really not seeing that these things can be very individual and that, the government may come up with something to get around what happened last time.
Right. Well, it's pretty evident to people like you and me that have observed trials and you've been in one that the judge is hardly able. In Marcy's case, it was clear that based on the judge's emotional response when the verdict of not guilty was read and he walked up, left the courtroom, I mean, that's not a response of somebody who's neutral with respect to the outcome.
Right.
It's just, we all know now that things are stacked against you. And the government realizes it has to win just about every one of these cases to keep the masses from understanding what a fraud, what a huge fraud this is. And they're beat and lie and do everything they can to keep winning cases. Their backs to the door and they realize that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, but like I was saying, it's hard to talk about it from our position of having lost.
Mm-hmm.
And, people say, well, of course you think it's unfair because you lost and, we need people we just need more attention on this. People don't pay attention unless they get in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get people to pay attention, people who aren't in trouble, get them excited about it?
Mm-hmm. it's a public relations phenomenon, the public relations challenge that we have is to get the word out. Of course, your husband Larkin is trying in every way he can and has done so for years prior to his trial, and people are doing so. And Marcy was talking, I don't know if you heard any of the previous show, about the butterfly effect, that, you know, one little ripple of movement of a butterfly's wings can have effects all over the world. And so I was saying, we don't know what effects this will have. Right now, it seems sometimes, you know, you and I have talked about this, and Larkin, that it seems like all these efforts have been in vain, that they haven't really done anything. But well, stay with us, folks. We'll be back right here in just another minute.
Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars, for nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
The Idaho Observer is one of the last independent American presses and isn't afraid to print the truth. The Idaho Observer is a monthly 24-page hard copy newspaper in its fifth year of addressing important issues affecting all freedom-loving Americans. If you are concerned about the burgeoning national debt and the Orwellian police state growing up around you, then subscribe to the Idaho Observer. Only $25, 12 monthly issues. Idaho Observer readers receive vital insight into events as they unfold. Our articles editorially emphasize activism and serve as a networking tool for like-minded individuals determined to make a difference. The Idaho Observer, printing what you need to be fully informed of views that matter to real Americans. Go to idaho-observer.com or call 208-255-2307. That's 208-255-2307.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against the visible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. That is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel or Jeff Bennett help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Okay, we're back here with the last half hour of the Peter Mac Show. My special guest, Tessa Rose, is still on the line with us. This trial took place back in November, and she was unfortunately convicted of three or four counts of willful fair file. I wasn't there. Tessa, why don't you bring us up to speed on what happened after the trial and what's going on now?
Okay, well, I was convicted in November. My sentencing did not take place until April 19th of the next year.
Oh, yeah, I just spoke. It was November of 2005, not 2006, just for clarification.
Right, November of 2005. So April of 2006, I was sentenced. We had several delays and my lawyer was trying to get a lot of information to the judge about what kind of person I was and how close I was to my daughter, and that I was homeschooling her, and getting lots of letters from friends and family and people who supported me to show them what kind of character I have and so on. And I really got the feeling that he did not want to put me in jail. He was very angry with Larkin and, you know, gave him a 15-month sentence and gave him 6 days to surrender himself. And it all seemed very angry and harsh. But although, in fact, the sentence he gave him was at the bottom of the guidelines.
But he acted very angry and harsh. And that's because Larkin agreed through attorneys to take down his website. If he hadn't done so, the threat was there that he would get at least double that sentence, right?
Right. He was threatening him with much more if he didn't take down the websites and file the returns, you know, all the returns from the previous years. We were looking at a lot more time. So, you know, under that duress, he filed for all those years that we hadn't been filing taxes. And, you know, pretended that we actually owed it.
Right.
And I think that was justified on our part.
Absolutely.
Because we need him. You know, our family needs him.
Sure.
So he went in on, sentencing was shortly after my conviction, and then he went in on December 5th, 2005. Okay. So he was already in prison. I wasn't allowed to see him for 2 months, and it was extremely difficult for me, and I was still facing sentencing and trying to prepare for it.
Right.
So that was an extremely difficult time for me. Finally, when the sentencing came, you know, I had the feeling that the Bailson really didn't want to take this out on me. He had done what he wanted to do with Larkin. But the prosecution was very nasty. So this woman on the prosecution side was wanting me to go in for 15 months also. And the judge granted a lot of the downward departures that we asked for and did a lot of things to get me down to a six-month range. And then he just wanted to make that home detention. And at that point, the prosecutor just had a fit. She was kind of jumping up and down and saying, "You can't do this. You can't do this. You have to put her in jail."
All right.
And she said, "Nothing deters these people except jail time."
All right.
I remember that statement. And so he said, you know, he hummed and hawed and thought about it and talked to the probation lady for a while. And then he said, "Okay, I'm going to give her 1 month inside and the rest home detention." And he also delayed it until Larkin got out.
Right.
So I had to spend the next 8 months. I mean, I was very happy that he did that.
Sure.
It's obviously so much better for my daughter.
Sure.
But for me, you know, I had to think about going to prison for 8 months.
Right.
Whereas Larkin only had to think about it really for 6 days before
right.
he went in.
Right.
So that was a little hard. I mean, I think it was probably more stressful for me thinking about it for 8 months than it was being there. And looking back, I would say that the hardest part of this whole thing was spending a year without Larkin. Being in prison for a month really wasn't that hard. A minimum security camp is not a real bad place to be. And now I'm on home detention. That's not so bad either because I'm with my family. You know, I just can't get out a lot.
Yeah, you're only allowed to leave for specific things, right?
Right. There are two classes that I go to with my daughter, and because I homeschool her, we go to classes together sometimes. And I'm allowed some time for shopping. And then I can ask for doctor's appointments and things like that. Mm-hmm. If I need to get out for something.
Right. And they monitor you with an ankle bracelet, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was the first night that was on, it kind of drove me crazy. Just having something on that you can't take off is kind of distressing, but you adapt to it rather quickly. At mm-hmm. least I did.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't really bother me.
Right. It's the modern-day version of a shackle.
But there's, you know, one thing about getting involved with the government is that you just keep noticing more and more stuff that's really bad. And so one of the issues now that's really on my mind is I've seen the prison system. I've seen these minimum security camps and the kind of people who are there and the length of time that people are there. And a lot of these people just shouldn't be there. I knew I shouldn't be there because I knew I was innocent and that my trial wasn't fair. But, you know, once I was there, I couldn't complain too much because I only had a month.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't going to cry about that when a lot of other people, everybody I met was in there for longer than that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I first started to learn about the whole issue of women going to prison when my lawyer was trying to talk me into plea bargaining.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave me a book about women's prison camp by a lady named Claire Hanrahan, who is a peace activist. And she was put in prison for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote about what really struck me were the stories about so many women who have young children. They're convicted of drug charges, even extremely minor drug charges, and they're put in for these draconian lengths of time when they have young children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so these young mothers are taken away from their children for 10 or 15 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that this is happening is because politically, it's good to be tough on crime.
Mm-hmm.
And politicians promise people that I'm going to be tough on crime and I'm going to go for laws about truth in sentencing or about mandatory minimums or mm-hmm. about conspiracy statutes that just rake in everybody. You know, there's one real criminal and then everybody he knows gets kind of pulled into the mm-hmm. system and they get sentenced basis of kilos instead of on the basis of what they actually had to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very easy for people in minority neighborhoods and in these kind of minority communities where there's a lot of drug activity going on, mm-hmm. it's hard to not know somebody. And just to unknowingly carry a package for somebody or to unknowingly drive a car that has mm-hmm. drugs in it, to borrow a car or accept mm-hmm. a ride.
Mm-hmm.
these things can get you landed in jail for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And there is really a lot of injustice here that I was shocked to start learning about it.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually became part of my decision to go to trial. Because I felt that when people plea bargain, it just gives the government more power.
Mm-hmm.
One person rolls over, it empowers them, and it makes it easier for the next person to roll over and the next person. So it makes fighting look hopeless. And
let me ask you this.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Well, I was going to ask you this, Tessa. When your attorney was suggesting that you plea bargain, was she saying to you, you're going to get a lighter sentence if you plea bargain? I mean, that would be the basic, that would be the main reason anybody would accept a plea bargain, right?
Yes, it was because the government, right away, they offered us, she was on the case, they offered us a plea bargain arrangement. And she said, you know, the tone, what they're offering here, and the tone of his offer tells me that they really want to go to trial. They were not really sure that they could beat me. And they really hate to lose.
Mm-hmm.
So what they were going to try to do was offer me something I wouldn't want to refuse and threaten me with, you know, if you go to trial. At one point, the prosecutor said, if she goes to trial, this is war, he said, attorney.
Well, can you tell us the details? And if you can't or don't want to, that's fine. The details of the plea bargain offer, or at least the initial one?
I can't remember exactly, but basically that if I pled guilty, they wouldn't try to put me in jail at all. So, you know, maybe it would have been, I don't know if they would have gone for home confinement, but they may have just, and now I can't quite remember the details. It might have just been probation. But I didn't want to say that I was guilty when I wasn't.
Right, exactly.
And she said, well, you could do an Alford plea, which is where you say, I'm going to plead guilty, but I'm not going to say that I'm guilty because I'm not. But I want to take your offer. At some point in this Alford case, the Supreme Court said that innocent people should not be denied the benefits of bargaining. And this was a way to give innocent people the benefit of a plea bargain. You say, well, I'm innocent, but just go ahead anyway.
Right.
You know, I'll accept whatever you do.
Right.
When she offered that, when she talked to the prosecution about that, they just laughed in her face. They were really rude. And they're like, how could she think she's innocent, you know? And that sort of steamed me. So, you know, that might have been a smart thing for me to do. Because it still would have been, you know, it would have been twisting a knife in them a little bit, but, and I probably would have been better off. But I just felt like it was my duty to fight and stand up and say, you know, I didn't do anything wrong, and if you guys want me, you have to get me. You know, you have to put out the effort. And in the end, that's, you know, it's much more expensive and painful for me, and they probably don't even care, but, you know, but it still felt like the right thing to do.
Well, I think you did the right thing, Tessa, by not taking a bargain. Of course, it's easy to look in hindsight and so forth, and since your sentence was relatively light, you know, had it not been, then maybe you and I would, and others and Larkin would feel differently, but... I empathize with you because I was, you know, hearing all this all along that year that Larkin was in. All the times he wanted to talk to his list and we were afraid and what if we do this? What if it makes your sentence harder? I remember going back and forth with you on all that. And that was a tough year for you. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Tough for everybody, especially you guys, you know. Yeah. But you did it and that's behind you now and... At least in one sense, I mean, the trial and so forth, and you're both out and you're together, and that's important. And, you know, eventually the government's going to realize that they can't lie and cheat in a court of law and not and do that with repercussions. I don't know when that day's going to come, Tessa, but I think it will eventually come, you know. And those people that prosecuted you, their names are going to be known and what they did at one point, and people are going to realize that who was right in this matter, and they're going to make their own decisions about what to do at that point, I think.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I think at this point, I really just feel the need to let people know what's going on and to, you know, to let people know the things politicians are saying about the courts and about criminals, and a lot of these things just aren't true. We don't have a fair justice system. We don't have prisons that are full of nasty people. We have prisons that are full of really nice people who are there for much longer than they ought to be. And, you know, when people get scared for their own safety and they think that being tough on crime or... Oh, sorry.
Hold on. Sorry. I know. We'll be back here for the last 10 minutes, folks. Stay with us.
In Matthew 24, the disciples asked Jesus, "What shall be the signs of thy coming and the end of the world?" Jesus answered them, "You shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines, diseases, earthquakes in many places. Fellow Americans, we are living in this time of Earth's history. People everywhere are trying to understand these climatic world events in light of human wisdom, but without the wisdom of God, this is impossible. Our ministry would like to offer information on the Mark of the Beast and the Unholy Alliance. It includes four books and several DVDs for your information. It discusses America in prophecy, the Antichrist, tyrants and wars, secret societies, the New World Order, and much more. So to be prepared for what is coming on the world as an overwhelming surprise, call for your free materials, Packet F, 888-211-1715. Again, 888-211-1715.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. Sure, you've got a mortgage and credit cards. Your debt creation is probably the smartest thing you've ever done. How would it be to find $75,000, $150,000, $200,000 or more you never knew you had? Now the Task Force has strategies to make these debts into virtual savings accounts. Ben Franklin said, "A penny saved is a penny earned." By doing nothing more than you're doing right now, because you've used your credit, the right strategies can make the debt part of your financial life the smartest thing you've ever done. Oh, by the way, your strategies cost you nothing out of pocket. Go ahead and check out the debt elimination scams if you'd like to. You wouldn't take money from a loan shark, so you may not want to give your money to a debt shark. For an understanding of what a financial genius you truly are, call 800-409-5633. On the web, mydebtfreepath.com. 800-409-5633.
Did you hear about Joe Bannister, IRS Special Agent Criminal Investigator that quit the IRS a few years ago because the IRS failed to show him the law or legal authority for ordinary Americans like you and me to file and pay income tax?
What do you mean? Everyone knows that you have to file and pay taxes.
Well, not only did the IRS fail to show Joe Bannister a law that requires you and me to file and pay income tax when Joe was working for the IRS, but even after Joe quit the IRS failed to show up to several dates that the IRS was invited to debate Bannister about the legality of the income tax.
Wow, this is amazing information. Where can I find out more about this?
Go to the website at www.livefreenow.org. That's 760-868-4271. And the website is www.livefreenow.org.
Welcome back to the Peter Mac Show. Thanks for tuning in here to the Republic Broadcasting Network. We have just about 5 or 6 minutes left, and Tessa Rose has been on the line with us for about 45 minutes telling her story about her trial, federal income tax trial. It took place back in November of 2005, and she served 1 month in a federal minimum security facility in Connecticut, and she's out on home detention, wears an ankle bracelet, and Tessa, you've got about 4 or 5 minutes left. If you want to talk about that, in a general sense, you've been talking about how there are many people in prison who probably are innocent and may inadvertently have been at the wrong place at the wrong time, particularly on these draconian drug charges. You had mentioned to me off the air about a medical prison camp where prisoners are often sent to in Texas, and you had some information on what happens there or who is sent there.
Yeah, I'm not speaking as an expert, but just what I've heard, and I've, you know, started to investigate this a little bit, just kind of as a concerned citizen. And I do have a friend who was from Danbury who was recently sent there. It's called Carswell, and it was investigated pretty much a few years back by some people who just ran out of money. And they found that a lot of the abuses they'd heard about were true.
Clarify. You met this person when you were in the prison camp at Danbury, not just somebody you knew from Danbury, Connecticut, right?
Right, right.
Okay, just want to make sure that was clear.
So I'm not actually allowed to communicate with her because we're both criminals.
You're technically a felon because you neither you nor Larkin was convicted on a felony, correct?
Right. So
did that automatically?
We're not allowed to communicate with felons as long as we're on probation.
Right.
And felons aren't allowed to communicate with each other. on the reservation. Mm-hmm. So yes, I've heard about this place and how little medical care they actually get. It's actually the only medical place for women in the system, mm-hmm. and it's just full of these, you know, little old ladies serving these way too long sentences, just, you know, little old grandmas who really need to be sent home to their families.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of heartbreaking. I could, maybe another time I could talk about it a little more.
Right.
But I think it's something that people need to be aware of, that this, nobody likes crime, nobody likes drugs, but when politicians come up with these get tough schemes, we end up with little grandmas in jail, and that's not mm-hmm. really that's not really what people wanted. You know, they just want to be safe.
Right.
So it's just something I would like to make people much more aware of, because I myself was so unaware before mm-hmm. this all happened to me.
Well, these are the same politicians, of course, Tessa, that you and I and Larkin and literally thousands, if not tens of thousands of others have written to asking for simple clarification on the tax laws. And, of course, 100% of them refuse to answer the questions at all. And so it's not surprising that they're grandstanding in some other area. Their only concern, with almost no exception, the possible exception in my mind, is Ron Paul, the representative from Texas. Other than him, the rest care nothing about the freedoms in this country or adhering to the Constitution or anything. They will do what they think is necessary to keep getting elected, and that's all they care about, in my opinion.
I know, but you look at these little old ladies and you just think, don't mm-hmm. they have any kind of compassion?